Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey, America. I'm Chad Pagano, former Army sniper, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and an avid lifelong hunter. And you're about to experience the Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth, airing live on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm here, as usual, with my co-host, Chef Chris Gesualdi. What's up, Chris?
Hi, Chad. How are you?
I'm great. I'm very excited today.
Aren't you going to introduce Jesse?
Yeah. Hello, Jesse, wherever you are, with Jack probably laying low, relaxing. Our producer and my other co-host decided, I guess, it's June, we'll rest, take it easy today. I know Jack drove 15 hours from Tennessee, so I guess that means you don't have to work. I guess he doesn't care about our show. You know, who's getting your coffee today? Nobody.
Nobody. Jack, have a Red Bull and a 5-hour energy drink and get over yourself.
And get your ass to work.
Okay, I'm tired too.
Well, it's funny that we bring this up today because today's topic for me, and I'm very excited about this because I know this is a topic near and dear to your heart.
I might even speak today.
I know. Last week we had an interview with Tovar Cerulli, very spiritual interview about the idea of harvesting animals and the responsibility of the hunter and the kind of food chain in general. And you didn't jump in at all. I was very disappointed in you, as I said. But this week, it's all about you. I got to be honest. This is your week because today we are talking about the ethics and the responsibilities of a hunter, which I guess translate into a bigger picture as far as ethics and responsibilities in society in general,
as people,
as a community, as a country, as a world, right? So you know, this idea of ethics in general, you know, I love this quote, Aldo Leopold quote, a peculiar virtue in wildlife ethics is that the hunter ordinarily has no gallery to applaud or disapprove of his conduct. Whatever his acts, they are dictated by his own conscience rather than the mob of onlookers. So, you know, the idea that the hunter is isolated, he's out there in the woods by himself. We generally get out there at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning before the sun comes up. You're isolated, you're by, you do whatever you want. You want to take a shot at a deer at 600 yards, right? That's fine. A running deer at 600 yards. I could hit it. I'm an Army sniper. But most hunters, let's be honest, are not going to make that shot. But you could do it. Is it illegal? No.
What's the longest shot you ever took at anything?
1,200 yards.
Wow.
Yeah. I hit the target. The target was about the size of a human head.
That's like 4 football fields, right?
It was far. Yeah. Did I say yards? Yeah. I meant meters. Because in the military, we used meters. So
it's even a little longer.
It's further than that. Yeah.
Wow, 1,200 yards.
1,200 yards. And, you know, we shot regularly 400, 600, 800 yards. No problem. That was an easy shot. Past that, you know, we had some Kentucky windage to factor in. And you hunters and shooters know what that is. And, you know, we had to compensate for the drop of the bullet, windage. But yeah, we could shoot. So, you know, is there anything illegal about shooting 600 yards at a running animal? No. Is it ethical? No. For most people, it is not. You're probably not going to make that shot. Is it dangerous? Yeah, there could be someone out there. Could you wound the animal and lose the animal? Yeah. That's not ethical. And that's what I want to talk about, this idea of personal responsibility when we go into the woods. You know, there's so many outlets for this discussion. But what about, you know, this idea of baiting? you know, baiting the animals. I hear hunters all the time. New York State's completely illegal. It is actually illegal to feed a wild animal in New York State, no matter what year, what time of year it is. So that obviously translates over into the hunting season. You cannot feed a wild animal. You cannot give it an apple. You cannot put out any kind of salt, baits, anything like that. Now, I know a lot of hunters like to argue about this. And I know I'm going to sound a little militant on this. I'm really not. Let's discuss it for a second. But, you know, they want to say, well, I ordered this stuff from online from a company. And I don't want to mention any companies. They're all great companies. And in certain states and certain locales around this country, it's legal to bait. And you could put this attractants out. And that's where the rub is.
It's cheating, though.
In New York State. Well, I love where your head's at, Jeff. But hold on. So they sell this stuff, though. It's not food. And New York State law says you cannot feed the animals. And the argument from some hunters, it's not food. It's an attractant. And we're allowed to use attractants. I use doe piss.
Are you telling me there's red tape in the woods, too?
There's red tape in the hunting world, too. So, you know, now listen, do I bait? No, I don't, personally. Have I baited? Let's be honest. Yes, I've put out some attractant in the off season to get pictures from my camera. Things like that. Don't come after me. I don't do it anymore. Never will. Just a little bit of an attractant. And the argument I hear, and the quote I hear all the time from hunters, you ready? Would you go fishing without a worm on the hook? And I say, well, no, I wouldn't. But same thing. Well, not really, but yes, I get it. I understand their argument in some ways. And if the idea is, or the end goal is, to humanely kill, harvest, and then consume an animal, why the hell would we care? You know, I don't see in states where they are baiting, where it's legal to bait, I don't know offhand, Alabama, Tennessee. I know down south, a lot of states you could
San bait. Francisco.
Probably. Probably. I don't even know if they hunt there.
Portland.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a more liberal approach
yeah.
to this. But it's not like they have any problems with deer populations or animal populations there. So, you know, it all falls back to this ethical way of thinking in the woods. You said it best. Is it fair? I don't know. I'm not here to, you know, put my ethics on other hunters. For me, no. I want to try to level the playing field for the animals.
I mean, I like the little call things you guys use to, you know, attract them with that. That's different.
Sure.
They're putting a T-bone steak out there when you're going bear hunting.
Right. Well, you hear about bear hunting all the time with the baiting. You know, they put out McDonald's. Everyone's got, put out Dunkin' Donuts, jelly donuts. The bears love that. And I watch some of these hunts on, like, the Sportsman's Channel, you know. And it's kind of frightening. They're hunting over a pile of animal guts, you know, in a barrel. And other times I see it, they suspend the food up in a tree so the bear has to actually stand up to reach the food within 30 yards of the stand, and you know they shoot the bear. Now listen, is it legal? Yes, obviously, where they're doing it, they're showing it on TV. Is it something I would do? No, I wouldn't feel right about that. My dream hunt, fair chase, grizzly brown bear hunt up in Alaska with a bow. Of course, we'll have a firearm backup on that so we don't get killed. But we all know it's about the food. It's about the meat at the end of the day. I want to eat this animal. I get extreme joy from that end game. But I also like the chase.
The fishing comment was weak. Fishing and hunting are two different sports.
Yeah. Okay. But they're also the harvest of an animal.
No, I understand, though, but I mean, the worm on the hook and putting shit out in the woods. I think those are two different things.
Absolutely. But then, all right, so what about this? How come in certain places, if you live in remote Alaska, right, special considerations are made for those people that they're allowed to harvest extra animals. Or if they're hungry, they could go out and shoot a moose out of season or a caribou or something like this. And that's fine and dandy, right? I mean, you wouldn't argue with that, right? If a person is living up in the wilderness and has to eat, he could certainly go out and harvest an animal and drag it back without a tag, without any regulations, without having to register that animal, check in with the state. He's got to feed his family. So they make certain provisions in certain areas. I live on Long Island. I bow hunt out on Long Island, right? I can't go out in the summer tomorrow and go harvest the deer because I want to feed my family. Are there no poor people on Long Island? Are there no people starving on Long Island? You know? So what does it boil down to? Why does the state say, well, in Alaska it's okay. On Long Island it's not okay. Well, I'll tell you first why. Because there's a lot of savages on Long Island. People who don't know how to behave and people who don't know how to do it ethically. They'll go out and slaughter 10 deer, lose half of them, drag the other half back, waste the meat, right? So that's what the DEC or the state's worried about.
Yeah, it's a different lifestyle.
A different lifestyle. So, you know, but ethically, if I caught a guy or heard of a guy who went out to Long Island and shot a deer in a cornfield, dragged it back, gutted it, fed his family, would I be willing to prosecute that guy or call him guilty? No. I'll be honest with you. I believe in the idea, you ready, of nullification. Disobeying, unconstitutional, or let's be honest, asinine laws. Do you jaywalk, Chef?
Not anymore.
Fucking liar. You're a liar. You do. No?
Not really.
I jaywalk my ass off. You know why? Because I'm not going to let Bloomberg or the nanny state tell me when to cross the street. I could see when a car's coming. Now, just because...
No, I don't do it because of him. I'm not listening to them.
Yeah, but why do you do it? If there's no cars coming down the street, you don't walk across the street?
No, I don't.
That's jaywalking. That's illegal. You got to wait for the little sign with the light up and the white guy on there, right, to walk across. If it's red, you're breaking the law.
Now what about all those bicycles driving in the wrong direction and going through red lights?
Good for them. Good for them. Well, just ride your bicycle.
And the other morons that are like walking instead of like speed walking.
Listen.
Holding up traffic all day long.
Listen, is there anything ethically wrong with riding your bike against traffic to get to where you got to go? Are you really interfering with anything?
Well, you could get hit.
You could. And you could die. Isn't that a personal responsibility?
Yeah, but I don't want that on my conscience because, you know, there's a...
No, you got a responsibility in the car to avoid a guy on the side riding his bike. Now, listen, if that jackass jumps out in front of you and you run him over, I'm going to have to fight with and struggle with that and live with that. And maybe you feel guilty. Were you texting? Were you listening to the radio? Pay attention when you're driving. Do everything right. And then when that guy rides his bike into the front of your car, you'll be okay. It's not your fault. But I'm not going to condemn the guy for riding. It doesn't bother me. I see people in Manhattan all the time, right? Oh, look at that guy riding the wrong way. He's not in a bike lane. He's like, who cares? Did he hit you? Did he get by? But he hits people sometimes. Yeah, well, that's personal responsibility. That's a different story. But the act of doing something. Hey, it's illegal to ride a bike. My kids are supposed to wear helmets. Right? They get on, Dad, can I go on a bike? Yeah, it's like a big thing now. We got to go out to the garage. I got dust off the helmet. When we were kids, did you ever wear a helmet?
Never wore a helmet. And, you know, we got some of that to talk about later.
I would love that. After the break that we're going to take in exactly 1 minute, and Jack's stand-in producer today is going to love me because I'm right on time with my break. But when we come back, I want you to talk about your notes there, Chef, because I reading them on the way over here, I think they summarize everything I want the second half of this show to be about. So, hunters, am I telling you to break the law? No. But you need to justify what your ethics are going to be in the woods. There's no one there to police you. Does the DEC walk around every once in a while and do a check here or there? Yes, we know they do that. What are the chances they're going to find you in the middle of your property baiting animals? Nothing. But that's your property. And to me, it's your ethics and it's your personal responsibility to police yourself and do the right thing by the herd, by the animals that we're trying to, you know, cultivate to try to keep these animals sustainable. So having said that, when we come back, we'll let Chef Chris take over. You're listening to the Wild Game Domain on heritageradionetwork.org. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Southern Pretender by the Four Lincolns on the heritageradionetwork.org. Keep it locked for more Wild Game Domain.
Not again. If our lives depend on it, so political, analytical, intellectual, ineffectual. Create Southern Pretender System. Mother, hide your children, hide your jewelry under the pillow. Sleep on it. The man in the white shoe.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Hey, welcome back. I'm your host, Chad Pagano, and you're listening to the Wild Game Domain on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Of course, I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Gesualdi. All right, Chef, what do you got for us?
I think, you know, you and I, we always talk about this a lot, and I think we agree 100% on work ethics.
Absolutely.
And I think about it every single day the way I used to watch my father work. I'm sure your father was the same way. They came over here from another country to try to give us a better life, and they did.
Absolutely.
I had an awesome childhood. I have an awesome life now. But I could see as I was growing up that a lot of my friends were not carrying on that tradition of what their families did, and I'm not going to work. I don't feel good today. My father would have never said that. He doesn't say that today at 81 years old. You know,
right. No, it was a different mindset. Those guys were providing for their family. Absolutely. And that's how I live.
And like, the world has just changed now. Everything is so fast. I mean, we used to sit down and eat dinner together. We used to go over Aunt Mary's house for Thanksgiving and Aunt Julie's house for Easter. And right. Those were beautiful, beautiful times. I mean, now young kids, they see you. They don't even say hello. We used to shake each other's hands.
Absolutely. You know what's funny? Walking to the train station this morning, I was walking on the sidewalk. There was an old man, veteran's hat, you know, walking his dog. And as I pulled even with him as I was walking, he was kind of looking up at me. And I said, good morning. And he kind of shook his head and fumbled with it a second. He said, oh, I'm sorry. Good morning. How are you? I said, I'm good. How are you? He said, have a nice day. But I could tell he was shocked. That a younger guy, and I'm not that young, I'm 42 years old, but compared to him, he was probably in his 70s or 80s, an older man. He's not used to 42-year-old people walking by him and saying good morning to him like humans, you know? And you don't see enough of that.
No, but whatever happened to hello, thank you, excuse me, you're welcome.
We don't have time
for
that crap.
Can I get that for you? I mean, am I really getting that old?
You are. But we have a personal responsibility. We both have children. We're raising our kids correctly.
Oh, my kids are being brought up that way.
Absolutely.
I mean, when I go to their school, sometimes they see the way their teachers carry on. I'm like, you're ridiculous.
Please and thank you. And see, that carries over for me into the hunting world. When my son, firearm responsibility. That's a big thing. And when we go out in the woods, ethics within the woods, responsibility within the woods. You're by yourself. You could act like a moron. You could run around killing squirrels. You could do whatever you want, destroy the woods. No one's there to police us. But my son knows that he has an ethic responsibility to do what's right by the code we live, the hunter's code.
I remember when we were like young kids, like 10, 11, and our next door neighbors, great friends of ours, but was arguing with my mother. And he sort of like raised his arm at my mother.
Ugh.
And you know, my mother's as straight as an arrow, straighter than any arrow you've ever shot.
Right.
But he, you know, told her father. The father chased the kid, you know, across the lawn and just smacked the crap out of him. The kid never did it again.
There you go.
And I don't, you know, believe in beating children, but when I did something wrong as a kid, I was scared to go home.
There was a consequence.
I knew I did something wrong and I had to pay the price.
Right.
And you got punished.
There was a consequence.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. There was consequence for breaking the law. There was a consequence for what you did. Right?
You want me to read some of this?
Please, Chef.
So I was always just blown away by this article. My sister sent it to me like 2 years ago. And it's like people over 40 should be dead. And it says, according to today's regulators and bureaucrats, those of us who were kids in the 40s, 50s, 60s, or even maybe the early 70s probably shouldn't have survived. Our baby cribs were covered with bright-colored lead-based paints. We had no child-proof lids on the medicine bottles, doors, or cabinets. And when we rode our bikes, we had no helmets, not to mention the risk we took hitchhiking as children. As children, we would ride in cars with no seatbelts or airbags. Well, I'm happy we got seatbelts and airbags now. Right?
Sure.
Are you?
Sure.
Riding in the back of a pickup truck on a warm day was always a special treat. We drank water from the garden hose and not from a bottle. Horrors. We ate cupcakes, bread and butter, and drank soda pop with sugar in it. But we were never overweight because we were always outside playing. We shared one soft drink with four friends from one bottle, and no one actually died from this. We would spend hours building our go-karts out of scraps and then rode down the hill, only to find out we forgot the brakes. After running into bushes a few times, we learned to solve the problem. We would leave home in the morning and play all day, as long as we were back when the street lights came on. No one was able to reach us all day. No cell phones. Unthinkable. We did not have PlayStations, Nintendo 64, Xboxes. No video games at all. No 99 channels on cable. Videotape movies, surround sound, personal cell phones, personal computers, or internet chat rooms. We had friends. We went outside and found them. We played dodgeball, and get this, and sometimes the ball really hurt. We fell out of trees, got cut, and broke bones and teeth, and there were no lawsuits from these accidents. They were accidents. No one was to blame but us. Remember, accidents. We had fights and punched each other and got black and blue and learned to get over it. You like that, right? Get over it?
Get over it.
We made up games with sticks and tennis balls and ate worms. And although we were told it would happen, we did not put out very many eyes, nor did the worms live inside us forever. We rode bikes or walked to a friend's home, knocked on the door or rang the bell, or just walked in and talked to them. I love this one. Little League had tryouts, and not everyone made the team. Those who didn't had to learn to deal with disappointment. Some students weren't as smart as others, so they failed a grade and were held back to repeat the same grade. Horrors. Tests were not adjusted for any reason. Our actions were our own. Consequences were expected. The idea of a parent bailing us out if we broke the law was unheard of. They actually sided with the law. Imagine that. That was my parents.
Absolutely. And that's how we were raised. I love that because it brings me back to a time where I didn't even realize I was learning how to be a man. I was learning how to exist in society, a tough society, where people weren't always going to agree with what I had to say or what I had to do, right? I love that part, the go-kart. You know, we used to do that. I lived on a hill out of Long Island, a big hill. And we used to make go-karts, and we'd smash into everything, fell off. I'd come home every night, skin knees, black and blues. You know what? It made me tougher.
We used to build jumps over with our bikes and ski. Can I read one more?
Please.
This generation has produced some of the best risk-takers and problem-solvers and inventors ever. The past 50 years have been an explosion of innovation and new ideas. We had freedom, failure, success and responsibility, and we learned how to deal with it all. How fortunate we were to grow up as kids before lawyers and government regulated our lives for our own good. How sorry am I for those years of meddling? Sorry, how sorry I am for those years of meddling have done to our children and grandchildren, and even sorrier that we have all allowed the government and politicians to get away with it.
Amen. And that's where my problem is. That's where I lament, because how'd I let this happen? How'd we let this happen? We let it happen. We let it happen. They nickel and dime us. And to the point now where we know about the scandals. No one cares, right? The NSA is listening to everything you're saying. Well, they got to keep us safe, right? They got to keep us safe. So that entitles the government to warrantlessly search millions of documents and listen to millions of phone calls. And no, we're not really listening. Yeah, you are, liars. The computer's listening. What do you mean? And you're looking for keywords like, bomb. I could be talking about, I'm a pastry chef. I could be talking about an ice cream bomb, can I? So this idea that we're going to sacrifice freedoms for security, to me, is utterly ridiculous. No way to live your life. And it boils down to this idea that the nanny state, we all live here in New York City with Mayor Bloomberg. Don't drink soda. Listen, do I let my kids drink soda? No, but that's a personal responsibility for me. You know when my kids are allowed to drink soda? Coke? On Memorial Day.
The funniest thing about all this is, though, if you look at a lot of today's young kids, they want to hear the other side, too. They don't like that wussiest stuff that we're shoving down their throat.
Yeah, no, but it's a struggle.
Productive.
It's a struggle with my own children. When my son, comes over, I want to go ride the bike. Where's my helmet? I'm like, just ride your bike. You're going up and down the driveway around the block. You'll be fine. I want to play with Joe Wydell. Go call on him. Go around the block and knock on his. My wife, I can't. Here's the story. She's got that stupid cabana, right? The Silver Point down there, right? the bane of my existence. And don't get me wrong. I'm not a big beach person, but I'll go down there because there's some cement for me to sit on and relax and look at the water, right? So we have everything down, refrigerator, everything.
Beer too, right?
I get it. Have a couple of drinks, absolutely. I got my grill, got the Weber down there. So I'm not totally against it. And we don't have a lot of time to go into my whole disdain for this idea of cabanas. But here's the thing. They have a pool. First of all, it's a private club. It's a gated community, okay, that we're within here. So I want to go to the pool. That's my quote. Joseph Pagano, my son. So go to the pool. This is America. You could do whatever you want. Here's my wife. No, can't go to the pool. Can't go. Need an adult. We need an adult. I'm like, what? He's 9 years old. When does he get to go to the pool? No, he's too young. I said, hey, and we share with another couple who have two kids, a 9-10-year-old. I have a 9 and 10-year-old and a 6-year-old. I said, all he is, get up right now and go to the pool all together. You stick together, you go to the pool together, and you leave the pool together and come back here. You remember those days when you stuck together and watched each other's backs?
Absolutely.
No, my wife would not allow it. So my wife had to walk him over to the pool, watch them in the pool, and then, her argument is, well, what if one of them hits their head? What the hell are you going to do? That's why we have lifeguards, right? You hit your head, the lifeguard jumps in and saves you. Calls your parents, we run over, and everything's fine. That's the way the world works. These kids have to grow up at some point.
Yeah, if the lifeguard's paying attention.
Well, then kids have to realize. We knew the lifeguards that didn't pay attention, and we watch out for us. I never hit my head jumping in a pool. And if I did, one of my friends grabbed me and pulled me out of the pool. You got to watch each other's back. So at some point, if we can't even let our kids walk to the pool in a gated community, I mean, when do we do it? My kids were like, and then so an hour later they came back, my wife and everything. And my wife said, hey, do you want to go over to the pool? The kids were engaged in an activity. This cabana system has activities. So they were doing races, whatever called potato sack races and all that. She said, hey, perfect.
Fun time.
Yeah. So she said, why don't you and I sneak over to the pool and go swimming? And I'm like, oh, no, I can't. My mother's not here. You need your mother to take you to the pool. I'm 42 years old. If I, what happens if I hit my head? I'll hit, who's going to rescue me?
How does she handle that?
She, looks at me, calls me a jackass, and we move on with life. But, I make
you
my
guys
points.
Should have your own little sitcom.
We're going to have her in. We've decided.
Yeah.
And we're going to interview her about hunting, what she calls the ordeal every hunting season. She has nicknamed it, the ordeal's coming. She won't call it hunting season. It's the ordeal because she knows I'm wrapped up completely.
No, you could be like the Osbournes. Get your own little TV show.
Yeah, maybe.
I would love it. I'd tune in.
You're in. You kidding me? You're one of the guest stars, Chef. We would love it. That's all the time we have today. But, you know, this was a great show. I don't know if we hit on everything. It's a half hour. It's hard to, you know, the bottom line is where to me, and maybe it's my militaristic background as a former soldier, we're at war. It's us versus them. It's their way of thinking, the nanny state. The my wife, you know, don't go to the pool. Don't let 10-year-olds go to the pool by themselves. We have to combat that. So if you agree with us, you're on our side. We can only change that little bit around us, our families, our friends, our neighbors, and we could create a movement of personal responsibility and raise these kids the way we were raised. You know, to walk on the right side of the street, to respect each other, to take chances, to have fun. You know, liberty and the pursuit of happiness is what this country's built on. So let's try to remember that, if you don't mind.
But I said enough to get me through the next couple of segments, right? The next couple of episodes.
I could shut up now for
the next 3 weeks.
No, see, I like where your head's at, and you really contributed today, Chef, and I appreciate that. We need more of you. We need more of you. We're going to keep this ball rolling, okay? But
Jack, have a cup of coffee, Jack.
Yeah, Jack, and email me back and give me a call. We got big problems here at the station, Jack. You gotta call me, buddy. I know you're on vacation. Love you, Jack. We're only kidding. That's all the time we have. I'd like to thank the station for producing and engineering today's show. You can always find archived episodes of The Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes as a podcast. Check out our new website, wildgamedomain.com. And remember, we're live every Tuesday at 11 o'clock. If you kill it, you better eat it. Personal responsibility. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.